better listen, my sisters and brothers, 'cause if you do, you can hear there are voices still calling across the years, and they're all crying across the ocean, and they're crying across the land, and they will too. We all come to understand. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. One of us are chained. None of us are free. And there are people still in darkness, and they just can't see the light. If you don't say it's wrong, then that says it's right. We got to try to feel for each other. Let our brothers know that we care. Got to get the message, send it out loud and clear. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. One of us are chained. None of us are free. It's a single truth we all need, just to hear and to see. None of us are free. Isn't too hard to find. None of us can find it on our own. We've got to join together in spirit, heart, and mind, so that every soul who's suffering will know that we're not alone. Oh, none of us are free.
Welcome to Reparations in Action, the radio show of the African People's Solidarity Committee here on AhuruRadio.com. We want to say Happy New Year to everybody. This is January 1st, 2012. The African People's Solidarity Committee, APSC, is the organization of Euro-American, or white people, working under the direct leadership of the African People's Socialist Party, which leads the Uhuru movement. APSC works in the white communities, winning others, just like ourselves, to stand in solidarity with the struggle of African people in this country and around the world for reparations and liberation. I'm here in the studio today with Jesse Neville. Uhuru, Jesse.
Uhuru.
And I want to welcome all of our listeners. I want to thank AhuruRadio.com and the African People's Socialist Party for allowing us the space every Sunday to have our show. And we have a really great show. We think that this upcoming year is going to be a pretty amazing year of continuation of the incredible uprisings of oppressed Arab, African, indigenous peoples all over the world rising up against this system of imperialism. We think this is indicative of the kind of period, and that this year is ushering in a tremendous opportunity for oppressed peoples on planet Earth. So, Uhuru, Jesse.
Uhuru.
How's everything on this New Year's Day?
Great.
I know today is the 53rd anniversary of the Cuban Revolution. You were going to say something about that?
Yeah, today, in addition to, you know, marking the first day of 2012, which happens to be the year in which the African People's Socialist Party will be celebrating its 40th anniversary, this day of January 1st is a historically significant day in revolutionary history for a number of reasons. First of all, in 1959, January 1st was the day that Batista in Cuba, Batista being the U.S.-backed puppet dictator, was driven out of power by the revolutionary movement in Cuba, led by Fidel Castro, which was a movement of the people of Cuba for control of their own resources, which up until that point had been plundered by U.S. corporations. And today is also the 208th anniversary, or it's the 208th anniversary of the Haitian Revolution, and today is actually Haitian Independence Day.
Yes, 1804 was the year, January 1st. Jean-Jacques Dessalines, Toussaint Louverture had been murdered by the French, but Jean-Jacques Dessalines led the Africans of Haiti into victory, one of the most progressive countries, liberation movements in the entire world, and that defeated U.S. imperialism, or French imperialism, mm-hmm. Napoleon's army, which would be the equivalent of the U.S. Army today. And it was a revolution that welcomed anybody on the planet who was enslaved to come to Haiti. And Africans who were still enslaved inside the U.S. in 1804, thousands of Africans went there and were given land and the ability to be free under this incredible victory of African people. It was an amazing revolution that has been attacked by U.S. and French and world imperialism for the last 200 years.
Today is also the anniversary of the beginning of the Zapatista uprising in Mexico that began on January 1st in 1994. And I think that it's significant, you know, all of these struggles led by oppressed peoples against imperialism, you know, European or U.S. imperialism for control of their own resources, which have had, to varying degrees, you know, success in attaining control of their own resources. It's also significant that all of these countries are still under attack from U.S. imperialism, and the revolutionary struggles there, whether it's Cuba or Mexico or Haiti, you know, are still under attack, if not direct, you know, colonial domination from the U.S.
Yes, I mean, it's really clear. And the year 2012 is one that has a lot of I think, anxiety by the white world, by white power. As it's really clear that imperialism is over. The legitimacy of imperialism and white power in the eyes of oppressed and colonized peoples, it's over. And it's just a matter of time until the entire oppressed world rises up to overthrow this vicious, vicious system built on the backs of African, indigenous, and colonized people around the world. And it is clear because the people of Haiti, Africans in Haiti, led the way mm-hmm. 204 years ago in the same struggle that's going on today. Mm-hmm. If the people of Africans in Haiti should be the wealthiest people on the planet Earth, there should be the control of Africa in the hands of African people. There should be the ability of Arab people and indigenous peoples everywhere to have their lands, to have their culture, their resources, without this vicious interference and oppression from the U.S. imperialism and Europe that steals their land, steals their resources, impoverishes the people, tortures, rapes, plunders all over the world. This system has to go. And to me, this New Year's Day represents the clear optimism that we have to feel that the balance of power has shifted and that increasingly oppressed peoples have and are taking the power in their hands, and this vicious system is in the process of being overturned.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and a really significant aspect of that is the continuous growth of the Uhuru movement.
Yes.
And both of us had the honor recently of attending an incredible event, a recording of which was actually just played on the program before this one, held at the Uhuru House in St. Pete to welcome the Venezuelan embassy labor attaché, Marcos Garcia, to St. Petersburg. And he was given a tour of the African People's Socialist Party's institutions here. And it was just a really, really moving and powerful event.
It was. It was such an honor to be able to be there. And I think that it really was so important. It was a really key event because Marcos Garcia, again, he's in from the embassy of Venezuela in Washington, D.C. He came here. He was with his son. I guess he has relatives in this area. And he made it very clear how important the government of Venezuela holds the relationship with the African community. And this has been mm-hmm. a relationship with the African People's Socialist Party that has been developing since the party's fifth Congress that was held in 2010 in Washington, D.C. Garcia also attended African Liberation Day last May in D.C., and so this is really key. And you know, the Uhuru House was packed. It was decorated in such a beautiful way. There yeah. was a dinner afterwards. And the community was able to have an interaction with him. And, you know, he just put out how that it is so important to the government of Venezuela to be able to have a relationship with the people. And to, you know, and he put out what life is like in Venezuela, what their trade agreements and their economic situation is. And it was very informative and just very, yeah. very exciting. Well, so this is a week now before the beginning of the African People's Solidarity Committee's annual conference, which we call a plenary. And it's going to start next Sunday morning. So there's still time for people to be able to come. You can still get a plane ticket if you're from out of town. We want you to go to our website, www.apscuhuru.org, to find out more. You can register there. If you're from the Tampa, St. Pete area, you're welcome to come. It will be an all-day event, Sunday, Monday, and half of Tuesday. That's January 8th through the 10th. And this is an opportunity to see Chairman Omali Yeshitela, to hear him laying out some of the foremost political questions of our period, as not just as an abstract theoretician, but as a real leader of the African liberation movement. So it's a powerful, powerful event. We're going to talk about it a little bit more at the end of the show. So you got to come. You've got to yeah. participate. And this is a particular conference for white people, for Euro-Americans, as the party says, that is an opportunity to hear the chairman, to participate in these kind of workshops and discussions led by the chairman, Diop Olubala, Deputy Chairwoman Onozinne Yeshitela, and other members of the African People's Socialist Party will be there. This is an opportunity to raise the questions that we have. What is our relationship yeah. to African people? How do we understand the world? How do we take on and really understand the world through the eyes of African people, rather than seeing it through the eyes of white people as charity or any other way that is just simply a way of continuing the system and the power, you know, of imperialism? How do we begin to see the world as those who are sitting on the hot seat, those who are attempting to struggle for their liberation? How do we embrace that? And in the process, find our place in this world and how we can be part of a true struggle against imperialism. So it's a real, real opportunity for white people to come and to participate in this. So one of the things we want to do today is sum up some of the top stories of 2011 and kind of show a little bit the direction of the Uhuru movement and mm-hmm. the world coming up in 2012. So certainly among white people everywhere, there seems to be this overarching sense of dread, of yeah. doom and anxiety. Something's in the air. Can't you feel that?
Definitely.
It just seems, it seemed like there was a lot less Christmas lights. And yeah, apparently there were all these people who stood in line at midnight mm-hmm. at some date to go shopping and that kind of thing. And that's because people needed stuff. They hadn't been buying things all year. But there wasn't this kind of, it's just so weird here in Florida to see all these houses with lights and Santa Claus and all this sort of wintry scene and fake snow all over the place, yeah. and yet we're in a tropical environment. But it seemed like there was a lot less of that, and yeah. I think that there's just this kind of sense of, whether it's the Mayan prophecy or the economic crisis or the continual wars that we see, and uprising everywhere and a complete disregard for the statements of imperialism by the majority of the people on the planet, white people were in a kind of in a crisis, you know, and we're seeing about all these different murders and people going in and killing their whole families and killing themselves, and all this seems to be in the news every day, and news that the number of people taking antidepressants and other kinds of medication of that sort is skyrocketing. You can't even hardly get it. There's a shortage of it because so many people are taking it in the white community. And this is, you know, this is because white people, you know, are still looking at this whole crisis from sitting on the pedestal of the oppression of everybody else, which is the only thing that enabled us to have the resources that we took for granted. We sat on the backs of the enslaved African. We have sat on the backs of the indigenous people whose land was stolen and who are suffering today in concentration camps called reservations among the most impoverished people on the planet Earth.
Yep.
Because we have sat on the backs of the Africans in the continent of Africa and Asians and Arab peoples so that their resources could come to us. And the reality is that we have experienced, as 5% of the world's population, 50%, access to 50% of the world's resources. That's not viable anymore. That's not possible. And so if we want to understand this anxiety as white people go into 2012, the first thing we have to do is look at the world as it really is.
Yeah.
You know?
I definitely have sensed that feeling of dread and doom and pessimism,
yes,
really, amongst a lot of white people
and
in particular.
Cynicism and cynicism.
Yeah,
you know, nothing can change.
Self-hatred, it manifests itself as that as well, you know, because it's, and I think what's interesting is like, I talk to people sometimes about, like, the crisis of imperialism, and the response that I hear sometimes from North Americans I talk to is like, oh, yeah, we're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yep, it's over, we're screwed,
mm-hmm.
You know, we're losing.
Yeah.
And that's true only, imperialism is screwed. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
And we're screwed to the extent that we identify ourselves with imperialism,
mm-hmm.
you know, and continue to identify ourselves with a system that up till now has benefited us
mm-hmm.
at the expense of the rest of the world. You know, we're not screwed if we abandon that completely, turn our backs on this system and take the stand on the side of the people, of African people and oppressed people that are causing this crisis. The crisis is not a bad thing. You know, the crisis of imperialism is a good thing for humanity.
I mean, that is such an important point because definitely in terms of imperialism, we are screwed.
Mm-hmm.
Because 1% of the population now, the ruling class, the bankers, et cetera, the politicians,
mm-hmm.
have, you know, in the face of scarcer and scarcer resources, because the people on the planet are taking back their resources, and also because resources are declining, we're past peak on many, many resources. They are hoarding it all for them. You know, this discrepancy between the wealthiest and the most impoverished in the United States is greater and greater and greater every year. So we're screwed because imperialism the ruling class gave a certain amount of the resources to the white population on the pedestal to be happy backers of whatever white power did.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, everybody sees imperialism is going down, including the ruling class. They're very clear about it. I mean, they're putting out books on it and analyzing it. So they're getting everything for them. They don't care about us. But the answer for us is not to be struggling with Wall Street to give us back some of the 1%'s money,
right,
which it has stolen from everybody else. The answer for us is to say this system has to go, and our future is there with the majority of the planet, the true 99%
mm-hmm.
of the planet that is struggling for liberation against this vicious system. And once we do that, our insecurity goes away. Because we're in good company. We're with the entire planet. And we're with people who are struggling for the interests of humanity, not the interests of 1% or 5% or 20%, but for the entire planet, for all human beings to be able to live, to have peace, to end these vicious wars that the Obama administration has escalated even beyond what Bush did.
Yep.
And what imperialism will continue to do as these resources get scarcer and scarcer and the crisis gets deeper and deeper. So we have to see it that way. Yeah, they don't care about us. They truly don't. They used us. We were their happy lapdogs. We did everything that they wanted us to do, generally speaking. But that time is over.
Yeah.
So they have their bunkers somewhere. They have their homes, their mansions in Shanghai or other places out in Asia that they're moving to, moving their children there and all that kind of thing, because they see that Asia is rising up and, you know, the West and Europe and North America are declining in terms of Western imperialism. So what we have to do is see our future in the struggle of African people, to stand with that in solidarity. And it means solidarity isn't charity. That is what is so important about understanding this. We're not going to, save one child. We're not going to make life better for one African somewhere on the planet. We have to be about changing the world. This system has to go. And the struggle that the African People's Socialist Party is about is the right of all peoples on the planet to liberate their land. It just makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't make sense for corporations like Shell and De Beers Diamonds to be in Africa, controlling Africa, while the people are starving. It's not sustainable anymore. It's not viable. This is not how the future is going to progress. So, you know, we stand on the side of justice for all of humanity, for an end to the wars, and for the ability of the earth to come together truly as equals, based on an end to a system of oppressors and the oppressed, and to be able to feed the entire planet, bring prosperity to everyone. Imperialism's not going to do that. It created the problem. That the future is in the struggle of African, indigenous, and oppressed peoples around the world. So that's what we see for 2012. This is, I think, going to be a tremendous turning point this year.
Well, I wanted to see if we could talk about the economic situation, because the crisis of imperialism, really manifests itself in an economic crisis within the imperialist world, within Europe and the U.S. And there's a lot of analysis out there about the situation that's going on with the economy in Europe. I was wondering if you could say something about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, Europe is in a very, very deep crisis. And I think it's very interesting. One of the things that we're going to be talking about next week at the APSC National Conference is the fact that how the white nation, as the chairman says, was consolidated as white and Christian based on the assault on Africa, the assault on the Americas and the indigenous people here, and the colonialism, the development of colonialism around the world. And I just think that it's so interesting that now, maybe 600 years, if you talk about starting in the 1400s, that we see now that white Christian nation is just completely cracking and falling apart at the very heart of where it started. And of course it is in the United States as well. But we see that the European Union and the euro as a currency is not going to survive very much longer. They're doing everything that they can to try to keep gluing it back together, but it just won't stay. They have one bailout, they have this plan, that plan. The stock market goes up for maybe 20 minutes. The next day, it's in a crisis. Oh, that didn't work. That bailout didn't work. It's ridiculous. They cannot save this imperialism. Mm-hmm. So we see Angela Merkel from Germany and Nicolas Sarkozy and the European Central Bank. They have no idea how to solve this because it can't be solved. There's no way to go. Everybody has their opinion, from the right wing to the left wing of imperialism.
Yeah.
They can't save it. There's nothing that they can do now. They're going to print more and more money and devalue the currency. Or are they going to let these, quote, austerity measures against working people, white people in Europe, increase, which will just increase the rebellions that are going on?
Mm-hmm.
It's a lose-lose situation. There's no way that they can put this genie back in the bottle. There was an article in the UK Telegraph this week announcing that the British Treasury is working on contingency plans for the disintegration of the euro. And the plan includes capital controls, which means they will keep people from being able to invest in Britain. And I'll tell you a little bit about that, because it's saying that the collapse of the currency, the euro, would basically create bank runs in Europe as investors would take their money out of the banks. And they always put them in what they call a safe haven. So that would be the dollar, and that would be the British pound. But But what that will do to Britain is raise the value of the pound, which they're trying to keep at a low value so that people will import goods made in Britain. So they don't want that. So they would keep people from, they would probably have bank holidays, close all banks, nobody would be able to get money out of banks or even out of safety deposit boxes or anything else that's in there. They would just like maybe have a moratorium on that. You could not do any banking for, who knows, like a week or 2 weeks or something like that. As they reshift all this, and I'm sure that's going to happen. But think of the incredible crisis that would create. I mean, basically, business couldn't function. You know, we're just going to see what they are entering into is a kind of crisis that is unprecedented in this period of history. Yeah, there were things like that in the 19th century, but imperialism wasn't functioning in the way that it is now, where everybody has their money in the banks and mm-hmm. their 401k and the stock market's all tied to the banks and all that kind of thing. And they have no idea what the ramifications are going to be for the collapse of the euro. They have no idea, but they do know that it will have worldwide implications and deep impact on the whole world economy. So it's just a very, very interesting situation, and it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out this year. And also that how ironic that the U.S. media and even the politicians, including Obama, are just sitting back like the U.S. banks had nothing to do with this. And they are blaming, you know, Obama gets to blame Europe. Well, this is why our economy is still so bad. But in fact, it was the U.S. crash of 2008 that really sort of precipitated all of the situation that exists in the short term. I mean, we understand that the true crisis of this economy are the rebellions and resistance of the people on the planet Earth, which makes it more and more difficult for imperialism to access the resources that they have taken for granted, that has really been the engine. The stolen resources and stolen labor have been the engine for imperialist growth for the past, 500 years. Now that day is over, so this is the true cause of it. And the U.S. is not exempt. The U.S. is worse than any of it. And it's really, really likely that the collapse of the euro would show a brief rise of the dollar and then a collapse of the dollar, which is going to be a very interesting thing. Let's say you wake up one day and your dollar's no good, or your dollar's only worth 50 cents. You know, just imagine the kind of crisis that's going to be inside this country, inside of Europe, and just about throughout the world. So it's going to be a very interesting period coming up. I know that Spain has announced that its economy did not grow in the fourth quarter, and they're having trouble selling their treasury bonds. Who wants to, it's broke. The government's broke. Nobody wants to buy their treasury bonds, which is a way of giving a loan to a country. I read an article how in Greece, people, and I'm talking about white people, are so poor, they're giving their children away. They're trying to put their children into foster care. They're saying they can't afford to raise their children and feed their children anymore. And I think it's of course, it's very interesting because when something like that happens in Africa or in Asia, because people are so impoverished, it's very much condemned by the U.S. media. This was shown with great compassion. You know, yeah. We have to understand how these people are poor. They had a high standard of living. Now they can't even feed their children. And what it means is that some of the conditions, and it's not even really comparable because the whole infrastructure at this point of Europe is very, very developed. People still have electricity, roads, etc. Yeah. But, you know, that we have been able to have that standard of living because Africans and other people impoverished by imperialism and colonialism have lived in such incredible poverty for the last 400 years, had their land and their labor stolen. So what we're seeing is a little pinch of mm-hmm. what colonized people have experienced. And again, that's all the more reason not to be calling on the banks to give us back what we used to get, but to stand in solidarity with African and colonized people around the world. This system has to go.
Yep.
So I know we want to talk a little bit about the wars, the escalating wars of occupation and plunder. And also we want to remind you that you're listening to the show Reparations in Action. I'm Penny Hess. I'm with Jesse Neville. We're from the African People Solidarity Committee, and we're here today on uhururadio.com, the online network of the African Revolution.
Uhuru. So we want to talk now about the escalating wars of occupation and plunder under the Obama administration this year. And we're about to go into a year with a new U.S. election.
And Jesse, I'm sorry to interrupt you, sure. But I did want to also say if anybody wants to call us on Skype, can they call us on Skype, Jesse?
Yes, you can call on Skype.
The ID is Uhuru Radio, UHURURADIO, or you can call us at...
You can call us at 727-565-1599 if you're in the U.S., or if you're in the U.K., 020-8133-6629.
Great. Or you can email us at dj@uhururadio.com. All right, Jesse, go ahead.
So we just want to first off say that that the Uhuru movement has provided the analysis of Obama from the very beginning, that Obama represents neocolonialism, or as Chairman Amalia Shetela has said, white power in a black face. And that has definitely proven itself to be true with what has occurred under the Obama regime over the last 4 years. Obama is a warmonger president on an even grander scale than Bush was. And this is part of the strategy of neocolonialism to mask the real face of imperialism and white power behind the face of an African, behind the face of someone who, you know, more so resembles the majority of the resisting peoples of the world than someone like George Bush does. And that makes it easier for white power to carry out its objectives, like intensifying all of the imperialist wars to an extent that would have never been possible under someone like Bush or McCain. It would have sparked massive anti-war protests. Mm-hmm. And Obama has expanded the covert wars, like the war that is currently being waged against Iran, although no war has been officially declared. The U.S., through Israel, has already carried out killings of nuclear scientists. I read that there was an explosion near a nuclear facility.
A couple of them.
Yeah, a couple of explosions. And the UK also has been participating in you know, imposing really strict sanctions against Iran. And the people of Iran have resisted that. There was an incident that occurred a month or two ago where Iranian students occupied a British embassy, brought down the British flag and burned it, and U.S. flags and Israeli flags, and raised up the Iranian flag, you know, on the embassy.
It was kind of like the 1979...
Yeah. When they took
nest
hostages.
Nest of spies, they called
right.
it. The U.S. embassy.
Yeah, and in fact, there was a for a minute, there was a report in one of the news that said there were hostages taken, and then that was taken out of the news. I don't know what was up with that, but there was definitely some serious resistance, and they were chanting things like "Death to England." And a U.S. drone was shot down in Iran that was being used by the U.S. to surveillance Iran, and, mm-hmm. and Obama actually asked for it back. You know, but Iran was decoding it and, you know, trying to figure out what the U.S. was up to in their land, in their territory. And this is all, you know, according to the U.S., all of this revolves around this idea that Iran is trying to develop nuclear weapons. And Iran says that they're using, you know, nuclear technology for peaceful means. But the real point, you know, as Chairman Amalia Shetela was saying in the video, actually, that was played before this presentation, he talked a little bit about this. The U.S. is in no position to tell anyone that they can't have nuclear weapons.
Right.
U.S. has more nukes than anybody and is the only country that ever used nuclear weapons. So,
yeah, I think that it's really clear that there's been this kind of saber rattling and serious threats against Iran for about 10 years, if not more, that you would hear, you know, you hear it. It seems to be escalating, and Iran has said that if there is any kind of attack against them whatsoever, that they will close the Straits of Hormuz, which 90% of all oil goes through that little strip there. And the U.S. is saying that it would definitely attack Iran if it did that, and other countries are saying that they would definitely defend Iran if the U.S. attacked them. So the U.S. is playing a very dangerous game, and it has to do with the whole balance of power in the Middle East, mm-hmm. that the fact that, as the chairman said, that the U.S. used Iran as their sort of outpost, their dog in the Middle East under the Shah of Iran. After they overturned Mohammad Mossadegh in the 1950s, who was very progressive government at that time. And since the revolution, the Iranian revolution of 1979, the balance of power has shifted, leaving Israel isolated and increasingly isolated as Arab people are rising up all around it. So the question of Iran, and of course Iran is near Iraq and Afghanistan and all the key pivotal both places that are key not only for oil, drugs, mm-hmm. and other resources, but also strategically and geopolitically for the U.S. government. And the thing that I think is really clear is the U.S. is playing a dangerous game because it could well unleash a true world war.
Yeah.
And as this whole crisis deepens, I mean, surely that's going to happen. What does an imperialism do mm-hmm. when it gets into a crisis? It goes to war more and more. And this is something that, you know, we could well expect to see, if not in 2012, in the next couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah, and there are many signs of that with, like, the intervention of China and Russia in this whole conflict with Iran, where, you know, they've, in a way, come to the defense of Iran and as well as defense of their own national interests, mm-hmm. revolving around nuclear weapons, in fact, and missiles and things like that. And it's just so clear that U.S. imperialism, you know, could potentially, as you're saying, Penny, push this conflict to a point of, like, potential nuclear warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just more reason, you know, for us to understand as North Americans, Europeans, you know, as white people, that there's no solution coming from imperialism, that there's death and destruction coming from imperialism.
And desperation. And, you know, things that they could unleash everything that they're saying that they want to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, they don't know where to go. They don't know what to do. They're just desperately trying to save themselves at this point. But at the same time, this kind of deep crisis of imperialism is a tremendous opportunity for oppressed people on the planet Earth, because it shows the vulnerability of imperialism and the simplicity, really, of the people organizing to liberate themselves. It's definitely happening.
Yeah, because you see resistance definitely on the rise throughout the world. We had the so-called Arab Spring, which was really, you know, uprisings of colonized people throughout the Middle East, in Egypt and other places, against neocolonialism, you know, against the control of their land by U.S.-backed dictators. And you also see resistance intensifying in Iraq, you know, which, in spite of Obama's claim of withdrawing the troops from Iraq, you know, there's still mercenaries and NATO is still there. It's still under U.S. colonial occupation, without a doubt.
Oh, there's at least 30,000 of some kind of forces there, U.S. mercenaries and CIA.
Yeah, and
which is their name, which is really what diplomatic corps is, CIA.
And the U.S., you know, had this whole myth that the U.S. government and military would be greeted as liberators, I believe was the term. And in fact, when the U.S. announced their withdrawal from Iraq, thousands of Iraqis took to the streets to celebrate by burning American flags and you know, demonstrating against the continuation of the occupation of their land. And then also another symptom of the desperation, like you were saying, of imperialism, was the way that it carried out this brutal, disgusting assassination of the leader of Libya, Gaddafi, which was filmed and put on the internet, you know, where he was
hideous.
Yeah, where he was, you know, raped and murdered.
Assaulted, and tortured.
Yeah.
In the most incredible kind of way.
So and this is under Obama, you know, and that's just, Libya is part of Africa, and the war on Libya is really part of an overall war against Africa that has been intensifying under the Obama administration, with drones being sent to Somalia, where millions of Africans have starved to death from a famine, a food crisis that is imposed by imperialism, stealing all the resources from Somalia, starving the people. And there's this thing, AFRICOM, that is expanding as part of the U.S.'s strategy to dominate the resources and control the resources of Africa. And at the same time, the war against oppressed peoples inside the U.S. has expanded under Obama. We've seen countless African people murdered by police, you know, young and old, including, you know, here in the city of St. Petersburg and other places throughout Florida. More Mexican people, indigenous people, to
viciously
this land.
Attacked.
Viciously attacked, deported. More Mexican people have been deported under the Obama administration than at any other time since the U.S. stole half of Mexico in 1850. And we've seen a rise in the prison population and a rise in the resistance. And that's what we want to talk about now.
I think it's, you know, is this the imperialism? Is this the system that you want to be part of? It's unbearable to see. I mean, it doesn't matter. Pick a day, any day in the last 600 years, and I can find you something in a book somewhere that the U.S. or European imperialism did that would be the most deep crime against humanity that you could ever imagine, of torture, of cutting off people's limbs, of stabbing babies and using them to play football with or soccer with, or of raping women and putting glass in their vaginas, of cutting off people's heads, of wiping out entire populations, of using, you know, I was reading about the Dutch East India Company that really started. That's how the world stock market started. They had people take out shares in that, so that, this is back in the 1600s. So what they were doing with the East India Company was selling or bringing opium to Jakarta, Indonesia, and basically using Jakarta as an opium transfer point for all of Asia. This is before the British got involved. And they sent something like 1 million or 2 million Europeans to Asia to colonize as part of that drug trade. You know, and just, I haven't, you know, read that much all about it, but we can imagine what that included of just brutal crimes against the people, just just the most vicious thing. This is back in the 1600s. This is how it all started. Mm-hmm. And basically, white people who invested in that trade in the Dutch East India Corporation got a 200% annual return. I mean, you know, that's incredible. That's way better than the 401ks that you're getting today. People, white people, this is how the pedestal was built. This is part of primitive accumulation of capital that created this pedestal on which we sit and which is collapsing today. Mm-hmm. But it's like this system has to go. This is why we are sick. This is why we are ill. This is why we have to take medications just to function and get up every day, because there is a direct relationship between what is happening and the suffering around the world and our lives.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to take on. And when we see resistance, it is so powerful. It is so moving. Once we can begin to see the world through the eyes of everybody else. And, you know, we saw the Black is Back demonstration this year in Philadelphia. We saw Diop Olabala's campaign in Philadelphia challenging the whole infrastructure of imperialism in the city of Philadelphia itself, challenging all of it and raising up these incredible issues of the colonial situation and poverty and the war against the African community there. It was really courageous. It was really, really powerful to see him just on TV, on the radio, on every kind of stage taking this on. And we see, you know, we saw what they called the Arab Spring, which is not over. You know, now that it's the Arab winter and almost to the next Arab Spring, they don't like it as much anymore because it's going deeper, challenging the Egyptian military. And all of the struggles are deepening. It wasn't just some fun little thing that imperialism could, you know, enjoy. It is deep into the roots of the society, and it's just beginning. And, you know, we see all throughout Europe, the African Socialist International is organizing, and one of the things that's happening right now are a series of demonstrations and events all over where the African Socialist International is challenging the fraudulent and imperialist-backed elections in Congo, and they're raising up the 50th anniversary of the brutal assassination of Patrice Lumumba, which is another thing that happened in early January as well. And it's incredible because the ASI is building throughout Germany, throughout Britain, in France, in Belgium. Africans are getting organized to take down imperialism and liberate Africa, bring about reparations to African people in terms of the stolen resources of Africa going back to it, which is the only thing that can ensure world peace, that can ensure the ability of all humanity to live in a positive way.
Uhuru. So in the last 10 minutes of our program today, we want to talk about the APSC plenary, upcoming plenary, January 8th through the 10th, Resist War and Repression, Solidarity with African Liberation. And we have a piece that you can read on the Uhuru Solidarity blogspot. It's called 5 Reasons Why You Don't Want to Miss Resist War and Repression. So I can read that piece, and then we'll give you some information about how you can register for this conference.
Yeah, I think you know, here's 5 reasons why you got to be here next week. You got to be here. Jump in the car and just come on down. Get a ticket. Yep. You can still get a ticket today. It's 7 days in advance. Mm-hmm. And if you're in the area, you've got to come. And you can find out more at www.apscuhuru.org. So, Jesse, tell us the 5 reasons.
All right. The number one reason is Chairman Omalia Shetela, African revolutionary leader. Chairman Omali will be the keynote speaker at the conference. He is the founder and the leader of the Uhuru Movement, chairman of the African People's Socialist Party and the African Socialist International that you were just talking about, all the incredible work that the ASI is doing throughout Europe, throughout the world. The chairman is renowned throughout the world for his stance, his revolutionary leadership that he has provided to African revolutionaries around the world from St. Pete to Sierra Leone. A veteran of the civil rights and black power movements of the 1960s, the author of dozens of books and pamphlets like Amalia Chitella Speaks and One People, One Party, One Destiny. And the African People's Solidarity Committee is honored to have Chairman Omali as the keynote speaker at the national conference, where he's going to be presenting Imperialism in Crisis, African Liberation on the Rise. So this opportunity to hear from Chairman Omali, powerful African revolutionary leader, is the number one reason why you need to register and make plans to attend this conference.
Just to add to that, Chairman Omali Chitella will also be speaking on Monday night as part of the conference. I believe that starts at 6 p.m., and there's a kind of special forum in the middle of that called the Occupation Began and Resistance Began in 1492. So the chairman will be summing up and give an amazing presentation as well on that evening. So if you're working on Monday, you can still participate by coming Monday night.
Yep. Reason number two, analysis and discussion on the root causes of the economic crisis. There will be presentations, forum discussions with speakers like Chairwoman Penny Hess of the African People's Solidarity Committee, the author of Overturning the Culture of Violence, addressing questions like what is the cause of the crisis of the U.S. economic system, what gave rise to the Occupy Wall Street movement, are white people a part of the so-called 99%, what does it mean to really be in solidarity with African liberation, what is the significance of racism in the struggle for social and economic justice. And there will be a Q&A discussion with Chairwoman Hess and all of the conference speakers at this conference. Reason number three, a look back at 40 years of Uhuru. Diop Olugbala, president of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement and former mayoral candidate in Philadelphia, will be presenting the African People's Socialist Party 40 Years of Revolutionary Leadership, Struggle, and Victories. The APSP, which leads the Uhuru Movement, was founded by Chairman Amalia Chitella in 1972, has since grown into an international revolutionary movement. And President Diop's presentation will look back at the glorious history of the movement for African liberation and self-determination. Reason number four, a look ahead at the new year, 2012, a year of revolution and reparations. This conference is going to lay out the exciting activist work of the African People's Solidarity Committee for this upcoming year of 2012. As the Uhuru Movement builds revolutionary organization on multiple fronts throughout the world, upcoming events, projects, actions, marches, fundraisers, campaigns, conferences, and plans are going to be discussed in a workshop called 2012 Revolutionary Transformation, Not Reform. So this is your opportunity to hear firsthand from the organizers in the APSC about the work of this upcoming year and to learn how you can get involved. And number five, trainings and workshops for activists. Let's get organized. This conference is not just a talk fest. The APSC is first and foremost an organization built for the purpose of material solidarity, which means solidarity through actions, not just in words. The National Conference will feature workshops and trainings for organizers on how to build and sustain organization through recruitment strategies and sustainable membership. APSC organizers will also lead a study of the organizing manual of the African People's Socialist Party, a historically significant document that has served as a powerful tool in the hands of the revolutionary leadership of the African working class. And this training will focus on how the principles in the manual can be applied to the work of the solidarity movement. So if you believe that African people have a right to self-determination and freedom, and that white people can take a stand in solidarity by working under the leadership of the African Revolution, then now is the time to go to APSCUhuru.org. Register for the National Conference of the African People's Solidarity Committee in St. Petersburg, Florida, January 8th through the 10th. Resist war and repression, solidarity with African liberation. Uhuru.
Great. This is going to be an excellent conference. And again, we hope we see you there. It's going to be an amazing year, 2012. Some of the other things that the movement is going to be taking on and the Solidarity Committee will be either part of or helping to build include the African People's Socialist Party USA National Plenary, February 18th to the 21st here in St. Pete at the Uhuru House. Everybody, North Americans, white people, are invited to that. That would be an incredible opportunity to come here and to see the party at work, to see how it really functions, to see all the fronts of it, and that you must come to that. That will be very historic to hear all the kind of summations the party will be doing and the laying out of the kind of amazing political and economic programs that they are putting into place. This spring, APDEP will be building the Nurse Mary Tour. Mary Karoma is a midwife and organizer in Sierra Leone, West Africa, and she will be here on tour, and she'll be all over the country, and I think in Canada, we hope, as well as in Europe. So you'll have the ability to see her this spring, and you can bring her to your area. Again, you can find out more by going to Africa. I don't have that title website. I think it's africafordevelopment.com or .org. We'll get that for you before we go.
Development for Africa.
Developmentforafrica.org. And there's so many other events coming up. The Uhuru Solidarity Movement National Conference. We're going to have a summer project in Oakland, California to build the Jiko Kitchen in the Uhuru House there. You've got to come out. That's going to be the majority of July 2012. There's going to be the Days in Solidarity with African People, the Impedum National Convention. There's just, the Uhuru movement is a whirlwind of incredible activity. So I just want to urge everybody, if you're not a member of Uhuru Solidarity Movement, again, go to apscuhuru.org. You can easily become a member for $25 a year.
Yep.
And you can become a sustainer as well. So this is the time. We've got to get organized. We can't take this system on by ourselves. We can't take it on by doing local random acts of kindness. That's not going to change the world. We have to organize. We have to organize under the leadership of African people who have been struggling against imperialism for the past 500 years. Mm-hmm. And to know that they are organized around a clear theory of African internationalism, that we have the ability to embrace that, to be under their leadership, and to work in solidarity in the white community. Come on, we've got to join the world. Otherwise, it's going to be depression. It's going to be crisis. It's going to be, you don't know what's going to hit you. This imperialism is going to screw